Branson, Missouri is a fascinating story. Its new airport will be just as interesting. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. I'm with Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. Reason is an organization which promotes private market solutions to problems that face us rather than government intervention whenever possible. And Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be back, Paul.
Bob, in the June issue of your newsletter regarding airport policy, you talked about a new airport that's being planned in Branson, Missouri. Now, Branson is an interesting place in a number of ways, especially if you're interested in market-based solutions. I come from a 30-year career in the radio industry, and because advertising agencies lose interest in consumers when they get over 54 years of age, radio, because they need to attract ad dollars, radio stations, have tend to drop programming that appeals to anybody over about 45. Branson kind of looked at that whole scene and looked at all these music performers, which have, you know, who have huge followings,
right,
and
right,
an extensive recorded catalog, and said, you know what, there's a place to create an attraction or a group of attractions that serves that audience. And I mean, now there are jokes about bus tours and motorhomes, but Branson is a really unique place,
and it's a huge success.
And its airport, or the airport that's being planned by Branson Airport LLC, is kind of a parallel story.
It really is. I mean, right now there is no scheduled air service to Branson. People have to fly in. The official place is Springfield, Missouri, 52 miles away, and they've actually renamed it Branson Springfield Airport. but there are no low-cost carriers serving Springfield. And so because of the demographics of who goes to, a lot of them are sort of working class people who don't have the money for really high ticket items.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're finding is that lots of those people fly low cost carriers into places like Kansas City, Little Rock, or Tulsa, which is 3 to 4 hour drive from Branson. But they figure they're going to rent a car anyway, and so the extra mileage isn't that much, and they're willing to spend the time to save a bundle on the airfares. So this smart group of people that entrepreneurs have a business idea that if they created an airport right in Branson that was attractive to low-cost carriers, they could capture a big share of the people that are now flying on the low-cost carriers or driving 4 hours to actually get to Branson and bring them right into town. The city officials love the idea. They're not having to risk money up front on creating the airport, but they've made a deal with the airport company to have the company have the city pay them a little bit over $8 for each arriving visitor, with an annual cap of $2 million a year. So that is a very interesting way for a city to get a new airport without having to put up any money up front. The risk is all entirely on the private company that's underway doing this.
Well, I know this might be a little outside your area of claimed expertise, Bob, but how does that $8 or $8.24, whatever it is, work out for the city? I mean, obviously, they must have done calculations where they figure what the economic contribution of an arriving passenger is worth.
Yes, and I'm not privy to that, and that is beyond my my expertise. Is not urban land use and economic development, but evidently the city has done those calculations and figured out that this will stimulate the market for more of the travelers that they really want to attract, and that it's worth it to them to have better air service, and that's a modest and reasonable price to pay. Now, if they get into 20 years down the road and are paying out $2 million every year, somebody, I'm sure, in the future will say, why did we get into this? This airport is now here. It's a booming business. Why are we still paying for it? But that's, the deal they made is for 30 years, so we shall see.
Well, hopefully they'll have the intellectual honesty, Bob, to look back and say, $2 million a year for what it's done for this place has been a steal.
That's right. If the thing really succeeds, it'll be a very low price to pay for having much better air service there and a bigger market of visitors.
Now, talking about the economic model, I have one big question. Why is it worth $8.24 per arriving visitor to have them arrive at your own airport rather than 52 miles away if they were coming anyway?
That is a good question. I mean, if it's only the people who are coming anyway, it's probably not. But I think what they must figure is that the market for people who want to or need to fly low-cost carriers would be bigger if they didn't have to rent a car and drive 4 hours in addition to paying the airfare. So I imagine they're hoping to that they will expand the market of that category of their visitor by having their own airport that attracts low-cost carriers.
Do you have any idea, Bob, what it takes to convince a low-cost carrier to do this? I know that right now a lot of them are talking about contracting. I think Southwest
is
the only top 10 airline in the U.S. right now that's talking about having a bigger year this year than they did last year.
That's right. AirTran, JetBlue, Virgin America are all looking at where they can cut particular routes or frequencies or something to hold down expenses and make sure that each route that they have has the maximum chance of being profitable for the year. So, I mean, it's a tough market to be developing the airport in. They broke ground 11 months ago, July 20th of last year, and on the website, I looked at the photos last month, and the runway is under construction. They just, in May, let the contract for the terminal. So, I mean, they're going full steam ahead and hope to have it open by middle of next year. And so that's kind of a tight time frame to at least sign up somebody to start serving. I mean, they've got to be hoping that they can persuade Southwest that this is a good thing to do. But Southwest, they tend to have very strict criteria for where they're going to add a city to their network. So I wouldn't say they're the most likely under other things being equal conditions. It would probably be the more aggressive, newer low-cost carriers. So it's you've got to see. I mean, this illustrates the risk that the private people are taking, and the city is not. The city is, if the whole airport thing flops, the city is out $0.
Mm-hmm.
If it succeeds, their outlay is very modest, as we said.
Well, that speaks then to where the money is coming from, and obviously somebody with some business acumen believes in this thing because it's been underwritten to the tune of $113 million in bonds by Citigroup.
That's right. Now, those were unrated bonds, which means they're junk bonds, because they are certainly, obviously, a higher risk bond than if you invested in the Pennsylvania Turnpike or something.
Right.
But people bought the bonds. Citigroup was willing to underwrite them. The company itself put in equity investment of $25 million of their own money, so they have skin in the game, too. They believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing is, what else could make it worth, besides the inherent attraction of serving a market that's a proven tourist attraction, what would attract a low-cost carrier? Well, the interesting thing that I discovered in researching this is that because this airport is being developed without any federal grant money, they believe that their legal research tells them they could offer a low-cost carrier exclusive rights to a particular route to serve the Branson Airport. Now, so if you're, an AirTran or a JetBlue or whoever, and you're thinking, the city wouldn't necessarily meet my criteria. It looks reasonable, but not as lucrative. But on the other hand, I get an exclusive for 5 years to be the only one serving it from, Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
AirTran might say, that might tip the scales for us and make it worth our while. And it would allow them, with an exclusive, they could charge slightly higher than they would have if they were facing competition on that same route from a Delta, let's say.
Right.
But they could still be appealing to the low-fare type travelers because it would be significantly cheaper than flying a legacy carrier's plane into the Springfield Airport 52 miles away. At typical legacy airfares. So there is a business proposition there that might well appeal to a hungry, low-cost carrier looking for a unique market opportunity.
Well, Bob, when you talk about a unique market opportunity, you're talking about a market opportunity created by the fact that there is not normal layers of regulation on this airport, and I want to talk about that more when we come back. My guest is Bob Poole, Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Bob Poole, Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. We're talking about the new Branson Airport that's under development, completely with private funds, and is expected to open sometime in 2009. While we've wandered into the regulatory aspect of this, I want to ask you, why has this not been done before, and what are the regulatory hurdles? Because I know in the case of Chicago Midway, there had to be special government permission granted under the current system for try to take that private.
The reason they needed special permission for Midway or any other is because they have gotten years and years and years and years of federal grants. Every time you get a federal Airport Improvement Program, AIP, grant, you sign 20 years worth of grant assurances. Now, this is where airport regulation comes from. It's tied to and directly the result of making 20-year agreements each time you accept a federal check. Without the federal check, you don't accept all those regulatory rules. And so the regulatory rules, among other things, require that you not make a profit on your airport.
Right.
And all net revenues above and beyond cost has to be reinvested in the airport, which is why Chicago has never made a dime on Midway Airport. But the pilot program under which they're leasing Midway Airport provides for exemptions from some of those grant agreements, and including ones that allows them to take lease revenue off the airport, use it for general city government purposes. If they hadn't had grants, a long history of grants, if they hadn't gotten federal grants for 20 years in a row up until today, they would be free to sell or lease the airport without any conditions, if they so chose. So that's really the nexus. Now, obviously, the FAA has other rules. FAA regulates the safety of airports.
Right.
They regulate compatibility with the air traffic control. You can't all of a sudden just start sending lots of airliners up into the sky from your X part on the ground. It has to be integrated into the air traffic system and so forth. So, but that's a separate matter from the economic regulation of how you operate the airport and what you can do with your money. The economic regulation comes solely and exclusively from the grant conditions. And if you don't have the grants, you don't have the regulations.
Big question, probably a softball, and I think I know what part of the field you'll hit it to. But so many things that are run by the private sector wind up being a better customer experience than a similar enterprise run by a government agency or bureaucracy. Is this likely to be one of these things, and how could airports be better if they were private?
Well, I suspect, yes, this is likely to be one of those things. And there's actually some a PhD student at Oxford University about 10 years ago did his dissertation on asking that question. Is there any evidence that privatized airports around the world are more customer-friendly, passenger-friendly was the term he used? And he did a detailed questionnaire to airport managers asking them about all kinds of different policies, and then created a scale of these, you know, certain things. How do you rate them on a numerical scale of being more or less passenger friendly? And it turned out there was a very statistically significant relationship between passenger friendliness as measured by this whole set of factors and the degree, the extent to which airports were privatized. I mean, the explanation seems to be that when people are in, you know, the whole American economy runs on people with business models hoping they're meeting a real need and satisfying customers. And it's a pretty harsh business model, because if you don't do a very good job of satisfying customers, your business model ends up being recognized as being flawed.
Right.
And if you don't, and you're under constant pressure then to try to tweak that model, fix it so that it does please your customers to the point where they come back again and again. And if you ignore those signals and don't please the customers, you tank. And that's some people would call that the law of the jungle, but the net result of that is that by and large, the private enterprise model really does work hard at figuring out how to please customers. And government, although people are motivated to go into government for a variety of reasons, including serving the public, government tends to be there regardless of whether it does a good job or a poor job.
Exactly, and so do all those jobs.
Yes, and so do all those jobs. And so there's a tendency for some people, not everybody. I know lots of very dedicated people, dedicated professionals in aviation, running airports and so forth. But there is a tendency for some people to just become time servers in bureaucracies.
Right.
They've got a secure retirement ahead of them as long as they keep their nose clean and don't get out of line and don't make trouble and just show up at their desk every day. Well, they're going to get their pay increases year after year and a nice retirement. So why should they put themselves out?
Well, and there's certainly nobody walking around on when things are going bad saying, Bob, you know what? If we turn this around, there's a bonus in it for you.
Exactly. There's a lot of things you can motivate people. And particularly, I mean, we get a lot of critics of the compensation that is given to top management in America. And, I mean, some of that, I think there are some egregious deals where boards of directors really aren't serving the shareholders by giving lavish compensation regardless of performance.
Mm-hmm.
But when you build in big incentive bonuses for top managers that you know that work 80 hours a week and really reinvent the business model and succeed in doing that, I mean, that is, I think every penny of that is earned, and the shareholders and the customers all benefit from those kinds of incentives. You cannot offer anything like that in the public sector.
Well, Bob, we always appreciate your insight onto these things. I know in some cases, particularly the user fee debate, you sometimes tend to wind up on the other side of arguments from a lot of our listeners. But I, for one, really appreciate your insight because you study this stuff day in and day out, and I am very excited to see what happens in Branson, Missouri.
I think we'll all be following this with a great deal of interest.
Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Paul.
My guest has been Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find them at www.reason.org. And if you're interested in Bob's newsletters on airport traffic or airport security, you can find them under the heading Research Topics from the main page. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.